Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. This talk is well dedicated to all those who find themselves in extremity and also all those who consider themselves to be part of the mandala that surrounds Telford Priory. And three in particular, who actually I owe emails to, I do think of you, and all of those also who have read Jade Mountains, my blog, over the years. So firstly, I'll just talk briefly about the attributes and the implements that a Chalanatha has, and that's a Chalanatha. I don't know if you can see it, but anyway, there's a statue there with flames all around it. That's the statue of a Chalanatha, often known as the immovable one. It's very central in our tradition in Zen, particularly from China, where not from Japan. Where you will see a Chalanatha being on the left of the altar and Kanzeon being on the right of the altar, and both at Shasta Abbey and at Throssell, there are separate shrines for them. So we're well within our tradition, and in Japan, you always come across statues of a Chalanatha in all forms of fierceness. And so to the fierceness. You could think that that is to do with chasing away people, but actually the flames are, and fire generally, is regarded as cleansing. So this is, the fire is a cleansing fire, not a scary fire. In which hand is it? Oh yes, the right hand Chalanatha holds a sword of Buddha's wisdom, which cuts through delusion. I should say that this is about us. This reflects something back to us. The statue is no good standing on its own. It is there to teach us and to remind and reflect back to us something that is innately within ourselves. And so that's really what I'm describing here. We don't literally carry around swords often, do we? but I think we know that firmness, to cut, yeah, the firmness within ourselves. And I'll talk more about that. So traditionally it's talked about as the sword of Buddha's wisdom, cutting through delusion, firmness. He holds a lariat, or, well, it's called a lariat, but I suppose it's a cord. And in one of the scriptures that we didn't recite today or sing today, it talks about a Chalanatha who binds all evil. And so with that lariat or cord, they bind all evil. And in modern parlance, I think we would talk about that as setting boundaries and being firm about where the boundaries are in terms of actions around us and of our own, very much linked to the precepts. So the lariat represents the precepts, and Chalanatha binds all evil. What's it? Peace, you who bind all evil, who look around and are yourself free from the fetters of Mara. The fetters of Mara being temptation. So that's a Chalanatha. And we, those of you who've been part of the Sangha for a long time, and I think all of you have, you know that at the evening office, sang, the last thing that we sing at the end of the day, we sing, one of the scriptures we sing is the invocation to a Chalanatha, which we sang. I thought we were going to do the peace, Ravana, the Dharani for the removal of disasters, which I actually recited at the beginning as a blessing. Adoration to all the Buddhas, adoration to the limitless teaching, peace speak, blaze up, open to the glorious peaceful one, to the glorious peaceful one, for whom there is no disaster. Hail. The one who is immovable. And here we switch to really pointing towards more intently towards ourselves. The glorious peaceful one, which takes us past the opposites of good and evil, right and wrong. And still we need to protect ourselves, and what protects us is are the precepts, because they are, as you all know, that which keeps us safe and is the way in which an enlightened person would wish to act. So those are the protectors. There's nothing outside there brandishing a sword. Oh, well, mid-80s, I was at Shasta Abbey, and part of my job as a chaplain for Reverend Master Jiyu was to look after her animals. At a certain point, she had, her bulldog had a litter of puppies, baby bulldogs, and she named them after the Knights of the Round Table. She liked to do that. And one of them was called Sir Gawain. Sir Gawain wasn't a top-notch show material, so she decided that she would keep Sir Gawain. He was really the runt of the litter, smaller than your average bulldog puppy. And it was my job to look after Sir Gawain. I have vivid memories of trying to get a pill down his throat, which is very difficult because they have cavernous mouths and lots of folds, so he could get his pill in amongst the folds. And then you'd sort of wait, and then he'd spit it out and you'd have to go again with the pill. Other part would be to feed him, of course, and also to take him for walks. He was rooted to the spot when it came to being walked by me. I'd have him on the lead. We'd get to the cloister eventually, and he was rooted to the spot, and I would do everything I could to cajole him to follow me, but it was a tug of war. And by luck or design, I came across a solution. Another dog in the monastery was called George, who is a St. Bernard dog, huge. By comparison with Gawain, I think that Gawain would have fitted into George about four times. He was that big. And George was very obliging and would put the lead in his mouth, and off George would go up the cloister with Gawain in tow, trotting like a little angel. Like a little angel. So the immovable one, I actually think I used to call Sir Gawain the immovable one, would be taken for a walk by George. and I would follow on behind. So why did he do that with George? I think it was because he was willing to follow somebody, something that was, it was another dog, and larger, and clearly larger dog was leader of the pack, so he followed George, and that was great. So he was both immovable for his own reasons. I wouldn't like to extrapolate what his own reasons were. But he was also willing to follow. I know that you can take similes too far, so don't try and take this one too far. We have to be both immovable in a certain sense when we sit and when we practice in our daily life, and we also need to be flexible enough to follow. What is it that we follow? In Christianity, and Reb Master Ji used to call this the still small voice, and I would say the inner promptings, that you get a sense that, oh, this is what is the good thing to do. And if you're a wise person, and it's a very impactful decision you're going to make, it's wise to run that past somebody else's wisdom, because we can so quickly pick up something as certainly the right thing, when in fact another set of ears and brain and wisdom may say, well, had you thought of the consequence? Maybe you just, you know, make some suggestions that help not to end up doing something you'd really regret. So standing or sitting firm whilst being willing to follow, whilst retaining one's own sense of agency. I think we know what agency is. But not being so rigid as to, in your own mind, and I don't think any of you would be this, it's my way or the highway. If I'd have stuck with that with Gwen, I'd have never got anywhere. Absolutely nowhere. So coming on again to daily life, and bringing the teachings of Achalanatha, the sword, the lariat, the flames, into daily life, which I've had a bit of experience of in the last week, having had three workers come to install a heat pump, air source heat pump, and all of five new radiators. And I felt that I was, and I hope you understand what I mean, holding the space. You know, I would, and there were boundaries to what I would allow to happen. And if I saw that somebody was, only one of them actually, was walking across the carpet in their boots off the drop sheets and the plastic sheeting, I would say, oh, Liam, can you not walk across the carpet, please? Let's put some more sheeting down, as it's called. And halfway through, we had a rainstorm, and the rain started to come in from the outside through the old flue the old machinery, what's it called, old boiler had been detached from the flue, and a little bit of water had come down, and with that was the me onto the Octopus Energy saying, this has happened, you know, I need you to commit to getting this fixed, as in get a roofer and scaffolding up and get the flew down, and to which I had to stand my ground and say, no, I am not going to take charge of that. That's your job. I'm not going to pay for it. You pay for it. And so for a few days I was having that conversation. That conversation is still going ahead, still not resolved. And it's a tough one, and that's why I think why you have the sword and the lariat, because the sword is being firm. For me it's being firm, and the precepts, the lariat, means that I can be firm whilst in the middle being true to the source, being true to the precepts, and not indulging in anger or blame or nastiness. So it indeed keeps the whole situation, in quotes, safe, as in moving ahead like Sir Gawain. Moving ahead, and you can so easily cut people off and they get as stubborn and as immovable as you are. So immovable whilst being willing to bend to a certain extent. Like, okay, you haven't resolved it this week. Hopefully next week you're going to resolve this. So this applies as much as you understand what I'm talking about of setting boundaries. Typically, setting boundaries of all sorts, like you know, what is acceptable behaviour in the priory? What's acceptable behaviour in your own lives from people, relatives, strangers, which you will be willing to go along with, and others you'll say, sorry, no, that's just not appropriate. So that's setting in a boundary and holding your space. I think we all know that. For some reason I thought of being in traffic, and you're in a line of traffic and somebody is really having a go at you, and you kind of go, you hold the space, you don't let somebody overtake you with their unhappiness. I mean, set boundaries around when something's going to end, which I'm going to set now, which I'm 5 minutes over. And I named the three people that I wish to dedicate this talk to. They're the ones that come immediately to mind. But there's those of you who are online, those of you who are here, those who look towards this place as a sanctuary. I rather like that expression. And those yet to look towards this place as a place of refuge and of learning to meditate. And I would like to all know that there's a steady trickle of people who are getting in touch via our website, wanting to learn about meditation, and are coming, and I'm showing them. So something's just come into the air, apparently, and so I look forward to being able to pass on what it is that's passed on. The heart of Kanzeon, compassion, and the heart of Chalanatha, the one who sits and sits and is immovable, yet has the wisdom to actually move if they are physically hurting themselves, which we just don't want to. So there's wisdom in there, in the immovableness. And with that, thank you for coming. Thank you for listening.